Back here for the Week 13 edition of the Horsin' Around podcast on DenverBroncos.com and Orange and Blue 760. I'm Andrew Mason, joined here at the palatial, sparkling iHeart studios here in the Denver Tech Center by Andy Lindahl, host of Palumbus and Lindahl, 7 to 10 a.m. on Orange and Blue 760 weekdays. Andy, how are you, my friend?
I'm going, Andrew. Is it safe to say we all just need a win?
Oh, yeah.
Thanksgiving was good. I tweeted you out a picture officially of my can of cranberries.
Yes. And my can of cranberry sauce was delicious as well. Thank you, Ocean Spray, as always. I need an Ocean Spray t-shirt.
Yeah, maybe.
They need to send me one for all the pub I'm giving them on social media. I'm tweeting at them. They need to give me something here.
This is 2 years in a row for you and me.
Yeah.
They should sponsor our pre-Thanksgiving podcast every year.
Yeah, the Ocean Spray Horsin' Around podcast. Come on.
Let's do it. Just one
week. Help us out here. We're always looking for sponsors.
Just 1 week is all we're asking. You can pay us in cranberries. By the way, have you heard about Tyler's special cranberry? He won't share with anybody. His wife makes it. She doesn't even like it, but she makes it for him anyway. You know why? She's a good wife. And he's a bad husband. And so she makes it for Tyler Palumbus, and then he doesn't even have the courtesy to come in and share it with the rest of us. Jerk.
Maybe it was that good. He just ate it all himself.
Maybe. Told us, though, she's not helping.
I didn't bring any of the yam casserole that my wife made that she learned how to make, even though she's from Wisconsin. They don't do yam sweet potatoes up there, and she learned how to do it. I didn't bring any of that in. I ate all myself.
Yeah, I'm not a yam guy, so I'm not as upset, but with all due respect to your wife.
Yeah.
I don't do yams. I don't do the marshmallows on the, you know.
See, we do.
Well, good for you.
You can't have a holiday meal without sweet potatoes.
Oh, you can.
No, you can't.
It's easy. My wife shares your opinion, but yeah, for me, eh.
Yeah, I did one Thanksgiving a few years ago up in Wisconsin, and my wife asked me, well, what did you think of the meal? I said, it's good, but it wasn't Thanksgiving without sweet potatoes. Y'all didn't do sweet potatoes. I nearly went out to the store at that evening, like after the meal, 3 or 4 hours later, just to get a can of sweet potatoes.
And you just sat there and ate it? Just pried it open?
Well,
Did you bake them?
I got talked out of it, and I had work to do because, even though I was away from the Broncos, there was still stuff to write, and so I sat there working, and then the time passed, and I did not go get my can of sweet potatoes.
Seriously, did you sugar them up? Do you sugar them up? Is it brown sugar and marshmallows with you, or is it potatoes?
Oh, it's the brown sugar and the marshmallows.
See, sometimes I like to make you pronounce cities in Florida just to get the vol in there. So
Jacksonville?
Just bring out the southern in you. You got a little boss hog to your slang when you talk. You know what I mean? And then you gave me a y'all out of nowhere.
It comes out.
When you get angry, it comes out. Do you go southern when you get angry?
When I get angry, when I've had a few drinks.
So when you're going full angry Ditka, you're southern Ditka?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, he was kind of southern Ditka when he was in Louisiana, I guess, technically, when he coached the Saints for a few years.
Hey, was there ever a more classic? I got to say this. It's been a trying year, and Vance Joseph has done a very good job of not losing his stuff on the media, and I'd like to use a stronger word, but I won't.
We're not subject to FCC regulation. Oh, wait, we are, because we're running this on the radio as well.
Well, that's true. That's true. I didn't think about that. But it's funny because I'll never forget the Ditka where he sits down. Wasn't it New Orleans? Where he goes, who's next? What do you care?
To the trainer.
Yes.
Next.
Fine. Next. Mike, are you mad? Why do you care? I mean, that was classic. Vance hasn't given us any of that this year.
He's been very good. Actually, I tweeted this out late Monday night, early Tuesday morning, about how impressed I was with how he's handled the fusillade of questions on Mondays. And it's been harsh what he's faced the day after these games during this 7-game skid. And I think he's dealt with that part of it very well. Even though some of the questions have been the same over and over. And that's what happens when you have a losing streak. It's the same thing over and over and over. And I think he's been very candid as well. I mean, he admitted when he talked about the quarterback situation, hey, It's not a good sign when you have to start three quarterbacks. It means that none of them have played well enough to keep the job.
Yeah, it's hard. And it's funny. I said this on the air weeks ago with Tyler, and I'm sure you'll agree. I understand that people get frustrated with the answers. I understand that nobody wants to hear you had a good, you know, I do think Vance is smart to quit talking about the good Wednesdays. But in the same tone, people do have to understand, like you said, that's Vance being honest. Okay, that's Vance telling you, I don't know why this went this way today, because going off of Wednesdays, which is kind of the temperature day, we were awesome. We had a good day. I was expecting something better. I don't know why Wednesday didn't transfer to Sunday. That's what he's trying to tell you. And then people see, it's funny because we in the media are nothing. Let's be honest about it. We're hypocritical because we get angry and make fun of you and draw up memes and do all that stuff if you're Bill Belichick and you give us two-word answers and you don't even attempt to try to extend the media session or really let anybody get anything out of it. Yet when you're a guy like Vance Joseph who gives you some honest answers and is trying not to play the cliche game and trying to be honest with the fan base as to, I don't know why this happened today. I really thought we were prepared. It surprises me we got this result. Then everyone's blasting him for not knowing his team either. And so it's a can't-win situation.
Well, it's like how you get on me when I had Pittsburgh ranked lower, and I said, yeah, it surprised me too.
Yeah.
Because I use an extensive computer formula to come up with my power rankings.
Well, we thought that you just decided them and wrote them down, and now we're finding out there's 12 guys fighting in your head.
Well, there's actually a very complicated formula I used to come up with. That's why the Broncos are sitting at 26 in my power rankings. But hey, when I give the answer that is honest, but everyone kind of goes in trying to think of a good analogy. Do you remember the scene in Galaxy Quest where they had those little aliens that kind of jumped all over Tim Allen's character? They just pounced on him. That's what the media is sometimes.
Well, it is what it is, and you're right, and I get it from both sides. I get it from the fans. I just think we're to a point in a season which we've not experienced like this, unfortunately, since the 60s, and neither of us were around for that time. Honestly, I came along well after. But everybody is so on edge. Everybody's so angry. Broncos country is up in arms. UC Health Training Center is full of a lot of people, not in very good moods these days, that every little thing is just irritating everybody else. And I don't know at this point, Andrew. I think you just need a victory. And John Elway said it to Dave Logan on Orange and Blue 760. You can always catch John Elway and Vance Joseph with Dave noon to 1 on Orange and Blue 760. But he said it then. He said, I'm not, Dave's like, where are you at? What's next? Whatever. And John's like, nothing big picture. It's real simple. We need to beat Miami. We need to get a win and break this.
And he even spoke of how human nature is working against the Broncos right now. Specifically, you have that interception in the end zone in the second quarter last week against Oakland. And there's that here we go again. Fans feel it. Media feels it. And I think the players felt it to a certain degree. And he mentioned that when it's happened over and over again, as it has during what was going into last week, a 6-game streak, and is now a 7-game streak. And you have that interception, and the Raiders marched right downfield and scored the touchdown that puts them in front to stay. And that outcome following that interception, it was sadly predictable. After that pick in the end zone, when Lynch was looking for Virgil Green, in the back of my mind, I thought they're probably going to score on this drive.
We talked to Manuel Sanders Wednesday, and he said, you know, to your point, he admitted it. You just sit there and go, you know what, that just figures. That's just 2017 in a nutshell. That ball bounces off of everything possible except the ground and lands in the lap of a guy
who's on
laying
his back
on the ground, not even in the play anymore. It was ridiculous, you know. It was ridiculous. It was what it was. But that, unfortunately, like we said, that has been the 2017 Broncos.
It's like, what else can go wrong? That was my, in my head, those were the words that went through my mind. What else can go wrong?
Yeah, and it figured because just two plays earlier, you thought you had a touchdown.
Yeah.
on a beautifully thrown. I don't know that Paxton, I'm not going to say I don't know. I do know. Paxton didn't have a great game. John Elway termed it as fine when you talked to Dave Logan. Paxton did throw a nice ball on that pass to Devontae Booker, where if you just keep your knee up a little longer, it's a touchdown.
First read, got it out, but a well-designed play. You had the matchup you wanted.
Perfect amount of air for your receiver to run under it.
And Devontae Booker has been doing a lot of good things in the passing game, and it was good to get him involved like that downfield. Well-designed play, good call, and at the moment it looked like, hey, that could really be the play that got you going, but replay took it back to the 1 yard line, and it was a correct replay overturn. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah, but see, I laugh because again, I've harped on this. I'm trying to let it go. I just can't. Because in that case, Devontae Booker, because honestly, it looked like the belly of the football may have grazed the grass. But in that case, they ruled the catch was over because the knee was down and he had possession. Well, I'm sorry. If you go back and apply that same logic to Emmanuel Sanders in a couple of other games earlier, Philadelphia in particular, knee on the ground, ball possessed, that should be it. If the play is over when the knee's down there, why wasn't the play over in Philly when the knee was down? These are the things that I'm begging the NFL in the offseason, please address, okay? I don't need perfect control of the football anymore. And quite honestly, you know what? I thought a phenomenal catch and properly ruled a catch for Antonio Brown along the sideline. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of exciting play I don't want you to take away. But you can't tell me he had perfect control. Why is it perfect control when he snatched both sides of the football but still had to bring it in to secure it? This is the kind of nonsense I want taken out of the discussion for 2018. I'm off my soapbox. I'm sorry.
The problem is the rules are written as they are because they're trying to take judgment out of it and put clarity into it. I get why they're written that way, but at the same time, I am with you. There needs to be some kind of visual test here because I think it's one of the things that is hurting the appeal of the game right now.
I would agree. I have a lot of fans. They told us earlier in the year, I'm sick of not knowing what a catch is anymore. And then you start to feel like the officials are against you. And then you start to notice when your team maybe has a few more holding calls than the other team. And then fans get upset when, in fact, you know what? Your team is just doing a little bit more holding. But I do understand from the fans' point of view that when you take away what appears to me to be a catch and my offense, as it had in both Buffalo and in Philadelphia, loses all momentum at a critical point of keeping that game a game, mm-hmm. Maybe I don't want to watch it anymore. Maybe I'll go Christmas tree shopping Sunday instead of watching the rest of the game. That's the kind of effect all this has. And so to your point, I agree. The league, I understand. You're trying to keep up with technology so that, you know, we created this again as a media because we have the ability to show you how a guy was wrong as we break it down frame by frame. But I go back to the classic Jurassic Park line where just because you can doesn't mean you should. Just because we can referee apparently off a frame-by-frame video replay doesn't mean that's how we should be doing it, period. Because at the end of the day, I think we're finding out the fans just want to think that looks like a catch, let it be a catch.
Would you dump replay?
I wouldn't dump replay, but I think there's a spirit of the rule. Would you not agree there's a spirit to every rule? And to me, the spirit of the rule comes where if it looks like you're juggling it as you start to go out of bounds, if it's clear that there's some loss of control, we can, I guess, start talking about that. But I mean, I say that.
But it's bringing judgment calls back in, and that's what you're trying to avoid.
But you're never going to, right?
It's opening up another Pandora's box.
Here's the problem. What we have now are refs, I feel like, refs just trying to let it go to replay. Whatever the call may be.
Now, that bothers me.
I feel like
because sometimes you don't have the angle to reverse it. And I think on the touchdown in Philadelphia, I think that was a problem. I think it didn't really look like something that was a touchdown, but it was called that way anyway. And maybe there was the belief that, okay, replay could overturn this, but there wasn't an obvious angle, and the call ended up standing, even though I don't think it was a touchdown on balance.
So let me ask you this then. Why can't we just simply go back to 2 feet and control? Not possession all the way through the fall, not because technically what we saw with Antonio Brown, that's the old school rule. He had control of the football with 2 feet in bounds. And for some reason, the fact that he still had to roll it into his body didn't matter.
Well, I agree with you, but the problem is control becomes one of those things with a hazy definition that goes into judgment call.
To me, if the football is in your hands and you've got 2 feet down, and the minute you bring it into your body, then that should be, we should have a catch there, and whatever happens, happens afterwards. This
it should
stuff,
be. If it looks like a catch, it is a catch.
Right. Well, thank you. And I
fall in with you on this because I'm sick of seeing plays that look like a catch by any practical definition of it being ruled incomplete.
Well,
and I think the other thing that's happening, viewing it from an attractiveness of the game perspective, a highlight perspective, we're losing some great plays.
That's the problem, Andrew. You just hit it right there. Nobody wants to watch an exciting point of the game get wiped out to have another play happen, and the next thing you know, it's a punt. Because it takes the fun out of the game. It takes the flow out of the game. It takes the momentum out of the game. And I'd worry more about that than the length of your game. Because you know what? I'll watch a good game as long as it goes on. But I'm not going to sit here and watch you. I don't want
to
find out.
It needs to be fun.
Yes.
And technicalities, while they make for interesting debate, technicalities aren't fun. The game is fun. Technicalities aren't fun.
You know what else I think is funny? Look, I'm a guy that likes watching the Packers. I would even call myself a bit of a fan of the Packers, not above the Broncos, but I do like watching the Packers when the Broncos aren't available.
I have a soft spot for the Packers as well, mainly in part because there's a lot of Packers fans on my in-laws and the in-laws of my family. Actually, my wife and I have a share from one of the sales that they had to. Whenever they want to raise money to build something, they sell shares. So there is a share of the Packers with my name on it.
Well, I bring this up for this reason. When the Packers and Cowboys played against each other, a few years ago, I was rooting for the Packers. Dez Bryant caught the football. I'm sorry. The one they ruled out of bounds that never gave the Cowboys a chance to make that a better game than it was. He caught the ball. He caught the ball, period. And honestly, when then the Packers lost to the Seahawks, I said, well, you know what? That's the football gods making it even, because really he didn't. Now, they still would have had to make a play to actually win that game, but the bottom line is you stole an opportunity from the Cowboys, and that's the kind of stuff we don't want to see. That's the kind of stuff that the NFL just, it goes back to the spirit of what it was, and let's simplify it from that point of view. As far as the Broncos go, Tyler Palumbo said something interesting to me. We're in an interesting time in Broncos country because the debate rages where a lot of the fans are telling you and I on the talk shows, well, I just want a high draft choice. They don't even seem to care if we win anymore. Now, some fans have said the opposite, but a majority of the opinion I've received, and I think you're in that boat, is, well, let's just get the high draft choice.
I will say this. It's a good year to be bad.
Yeah, it is.
This is a very good draft.
But Tyler Palumbas did say something interesting to me the other day. He said, I've been a part of teams that have lost double-digit games in a row, and that's damning to your culture.
Yes,
that's hard to come back
from. It's hard to reverse.
And so he's point
blank. A losing culture is hard to change.
You need to win a game.
Ask Cleveland about that.
Well, so to his point, you need to win a game. And it may cost you, even just one win could take you out of the quarterback sweepstakes, so to speak, as we just kind of put that out there.
I don't think it does, though. I don't think it does.
Well, it depends on how many come out, though. We don't know that all four of the good ones in college are coming out.
We don't know that, but I think there will be enough. And I don't. If quarterback is where you're looking, and you really, if you really want one of those guys, you're... The best you can do is 8-8. Philadelphia was at 7-9 and moved up to get Carson Wentz. They moved up to number 2. So I think you are already sitting at the point where if you wanted to move up, if you said, okay, I have to get near the top of the draft to get my guy, you're already there. It's no longer unfeasible to do that. So I think you're already past that. So I do think it is important to win, and at least stop this streak.
Yeah, you can't go winless since the bye. Period. You got to have a win or two, and that's what
this streak
at.
Has been traumatic.
I agree with you.
From a football perspective, for the locker room, for the organization, for the fan base. I mean, I often talk about how if you're a Broncos fan and you are 45 years old, that you don't remember what it was like for your team to be bad. Well, if you're a Broncos fan, and until this moment, You could be a Broncos fan of 55 years old, and you don't really have a tangible memory of a 7-game losing streak until now. This is new territory.
Yeah,
it is a, and so I do get that it is a traumatic experience in the small, narrow football perspective. I'm not comparing it to the traumas of life, but in a small, narrow football perspective, it is a traumatic experience to go through a 7-game losing streak if, as a Bronco fan, having never seen anything like this before. This is unusual.
Okay, well, so I brought up the quarterback position because, of course, that's, you and I well know, we're going to get a healthy dose of debate about that as soon as the season's over, and
frankly,
it's already begun. Nobody's surprised by that. I have to ask you, and I'm a little surprised. I know the fans are tired of the status quo. I get that. And that goes for every position. It feels like every position from coaching to whatever, the fans are out doing what fans do. They want mass change. You got to take a breath on the mass change sometimes is what I would say.
Well, the other thing, if you really want to get this thing turned around as quickly as possible, you don't burn it all to the ground. I mean, I'll give you an example. When former Broncos coach John Fox, when he went to Carolina in 2002, he took over a 1-15 team that was aging in a lot of key spots. You would have walked in there and thought, burn it all to the ground. But instead, they did some selective retooling over the course of 2 off seasons. And lo and behold, in 24 months, they go from 1-15 to appearing in the Super Bowl. And that was because they didn't clear cut the whole thing. They said, okay, what are the positives that we can take from this? I mean, and if they clear cut the whole thing, then they're not throwing the ball to Mohsin Muhammad and Steve Smith in Super Bowl 38, for example. Parts of their offensive line aren't there. Mike Minner, Mike Rucker, big players on their defense, along with Julius Peppers, who they drafted. They're not there. It's important as you start emerging from this, I think, and everyone, yeah, and I know everyone's frustrated. I know there are some that say burn it all to the ground. I don't think that is the wisest course of action. I think you need to be selective and pragmatic and go at it with a surgical perspective rather than a clear-cutting perspective.
I also want to apply that to the quarterbacks, though. I understand that people are frustrated with the quarterbacks. You want to draft a new one. You want to sign one. We've heard the free agent wish list of everybody on and on and on. I'm just going to tell Broncos country, you still have 2 young guys, whether you like it or not, that are going to be under contract and cheap in Paxton and Trevor. And yes, I do think new guys will be brought into the mix to compete, whether
Chad
that's
Kelly
a draft
too.
Pick or a free agent or someone else. Chad Kelly's going to be in there. You may want to have 6 in camp next year. I don't know. You know, I know at some point you don't have enough reps for everybody. But the bottom line is
2 fields.
Yeah. Hey, I'm just saying, everybody just let's see what Trevor gives you over the next few games in a Musgrave offense. And for those, you know, I've been trying to tell people, and it's been an interesting year. I've been trying to tell people all year, and I think you've been in the camp with me. We've been trying to tell you Paxton's not ready. People don't want to hear that because of the success of others. I think Paxton shows at points he's not ready. That does not mean that you need to cut the guy after the year, and as you just laid out, burn it to the ground and have nothing to do with him again. He did take steps in that game. John Elway pointed it out. He did make some reads he wasn't making in training camp. Now, did everything look perfect? It did not. But as we warned you again going into the game, the guy has not practiced or worked on the field in 2 months.
Maybe it looks different if the pass to Janovich isn't wiped out because of a penalty.
Maybe it looks different if he's able to hit Fowler off by a couple yards. Mm-hmm. Maybe it looks different if Devontae Booker actually is ruled as a touchdown and stays as a touchdown. A lot of things could have been different. I don't know. Look, I'm not, Andrew, there's still room. Paxton has got to get some things done. Mm-hmm. Paxton has to do some things himself, in my opinion, that, you know, get you on the field and make you more of a viable option. But nonetheless, to your point, I know everyone's you want a new QB and a new shiny toy, and that's fine. I'm sure you're going to get one of those options. But the reality is, There's two young guys that you don't need to just completely blow out of here because there's still potential there. And there's a lot of stuff that needs to go on around it as well. So everybody, before we put together the Eli Manning, Drew Brees wish list, which I don't think is realistic because Eli clearly has a relationship he values with Tom Coughlin. And Drew Brees, for those that have not heard it, has said, I'm not leaving New Orleans.
And I think they're doing well enough to where the Saints are doing well enough to where they can kick the can down the road and find a way to get him back for 2018. Because it looks like their window has opened up again.
Well, and on top of it, man, Drew, I mean, let's be honest about it. Manning didn't want to leave. Peyton Manning did not want to leave Indy. You and I both know it killed him to leave Indy.
And if you're the Saints, why would you let him go right now when you've...
You frankly have nothing else that I'm aware of,
You've returned to the ranks of contenders, and you don't have any, and you don't have a viable option waiting in the wings right now that keeps you there.
Can I ask you one thing? And we've got to talk about it on the air. What is the Jimmy Garoppolo deal? I don't get it. Are we finding out that that it looks like the Niners plan on going ahead and franchising him to get a first and a third, and they don't really intend? Because people are telling me that looks like more the plan than actually having him be the Niner answer to the future. Does that look like the play for you?
I think they're keeping their options as open as possible. And I think...
Does that surprise you? I'm shocked by that. I thought when you gave up a second rounder, you announced, here's our guy. Are you surprised by this?
No, I'm not surprised at all.
Well, you're just better than me.
I think they wanted to keep their options, whether it was Jimmy Garoppolo, quarterback of the future, or Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe we trade him at some point. I think they wanted to keep as many options on the table as possible for themselves in the future. If Garoppolo learns the system, shows that he could be the quarterback of the future, great. That's awesome. Awesome for them. You got him for a second round for, what was a second round pick that they traded?
Yep.
To the Patriots. That's a bargain, at least on the trade market. It certainly won't be a bargain in terms of what they have to pay contract-wise going forward. But it's a bargain in terms of trade draft pick value. But if he's not the guy, then one reason why maybe you would hold off on playing him, he's learning a new offense.
Which, for those that haven't heard us talk about it before, Josh McDaniels' language versus the West Coast language
is pretty much
French and German.
Yes. Actually, I'd say more than that. I'd say it's like French
and Japanese
and Cantonese.
Okay. Hey, potato, potato.
Yeah, exactly. Or Mandarin or Japanese.
Bottom line is it's going to take him a while to be able to process in his head the difference between the playbooks.
French and German, at least it's the same alphabet. That's why I would say Mandarin
or
Russian
in
the Cyrillic alphabet. These are different alphabets, I would say.
Look, you can keep trying to be smarter than me all day. People knew that going in. They know it when we're done. Bottom line is this is why Garoppolo is taking a while for those that wonder. Yeah.
And the thing is, if Garoppolo goes out there and plays and struggles, then maybe that depresses potential trade value.
That's true, and I think that's some of what they're, because honestly, Andrew, tell me you haven't seen this as well. I feel like at times, one of the struggles in the season, and one of the times where it really was, I don't know if clear is the right word, but really had me suspecting this, how about I put it that way, is there was a time where Trevor Siemian was trying to audible, and Demaryius Thomas from his wide receiver position put his hands out and clearly could not understand what they were trying to get on the same page. They had to call a timeout. It looked like a pitcher and a catcher needing to get together on what exactly what pitch was coming.
It takes time.
Yeah, I just think that's one of the things that, again, this has been a bad year. No one's going to try to sell you otherwise, but there are reasons behind it. There's not excuses. There's reasons. Mm-hmm. When you go to this different in offense and what Mike McCoy's offense required from the quarterbacks and receivers being on the same page, I'm not overly shocked. Did I expect it going this way to where you're shut out in one game and struggling to score? No, but we have seen this be a very hard system for teams to implement.
Even Mike McCoy talked about how what you're teaching in the second year of the scheme is different than what you're teaching in the first year. Now, that's not going to happen, obviously, because McCoy is no longer with the team. But it was a multi-year process. And it's why it's fascinating to see in what direction the Broncos ultimately go with their offense. I think a lot of it's based on what happens over the next five games with Bill Musgrave as offensive coordinator.
It's going to be an interesting game, Andrew. The defense is going to be shorthanded.
Yeah, the defense is going to be shorthanded. Jay Cutler, Adam Gase, two people very familiar to the Broncos. The last time they faced the Broncos, it was back in 2015. They were both with the Chicago Bears, 17-15. Broncos eked out a win. Late two-point conversion stop at Soldier Field to prevent a Chicago comeback. Certainly hope it's a similar outcome, it's at least in the win-loss ledger for the Broncos this time. Again, got to stop that streak. And I understand fans saying, hey, lose, tank, draft pick, all that. The draft offers no guarantees. You've got to stop this skid now.
Yeah, well, that's going to be tough. I don't know what to say.
Miami's on a five-game skid, too.
No, I understand that. And we talked to their former tight end today, Joe. I'm forgetting his Joe Ross.
Joe Rose.
I'm sorry, Joe Rose. But it was mind-boggling. You want to know why, Andrew? Because everything he talked about, if you and I were doing an interview in another market about the Broncos, we would have been making the not similar, the exact same points as to why there are struggles.
They didn't expect to be in this spot either. In fact, the NFL, when the schedule comes out, or not long after the schedule comes out, they put out a thing that says, like, these are the games of the week to watch. The game of the week that they put out for this week, way back in April or May, was this game, as far as having the best storylines.
Honestly, I thought this was going to be a game for major playoff position in the AFC.
So did I. I thought this would be one that, at the very least, you might be talking about this game deciding a wild card spot.
I agreed. Fully agreed. I thought the Dolphins would be chasing the Patriots as per usual, and we might be chasing the Chiefs.
And now here you are talking about one team with a five-game losing streak, another team with a seven-game losing streak. I did not, in my worst nightmare, envision this matchup looking like this. That's how it happens sometimes.
All right, we'll go ahead, we'll hear from Joe Rose. That's next here on the Horse and Around podcast. He's Andrew Mason, I'm Andy Lindahl. I guess we'll talk to you next week. Hopefully we break this streak on the Horse and Around podcast. Former Dolphin tight end Joe Rose, as he joins Andy Lindahl and Tyler Palumbus. Hello, Joe, how are you doing? How's Miami?
Andy, Tyler, how you doing? I wasn't sure if that soundbite I just heard was one of the Dolphin players or the Bronco players. I wasn't sure. That sounded a lot alike from what I'm hearing here in South Florida.
Joe, it's amazing to me, if Mike McCoy would have stayed offensive coordinator, and of course Adam Gase worked under Mike McCoy here in Denver, then Gase takes over for McCoy when he leaves for San Diego. But it was amazing to me watching during the stretch here at the end of October, start of November to mid-November, where these two teams sadly were identical to the point where the defense was getting a lot of stuff done. The defenses for both teams were giving the offenses a chance to win games. And the offenses look so similar to me, where they could move the ball between the 20s and not cash it in the red zone. It just is amazing to me. What do you make of this kind of Patriot offshoot offense that's popular in the NFL because of the success the Patriots has had? But I'm telling you, I saw this with Josh here. I've seen it with, you look at the Houston Texans. It's amazing to me that the teams that run this, the red zone's always an issue for these folks.
I can tell you this, we got red zone problems. It seems to always end up, once we march down to the 20, 25-yard line, we turn it over in the end zone, which I know you guys have dealt with too, or we're second in the NFL in penalties, a lot of them on the offensive line. It's been really bad. Some guys have lost their cool. We had a guy kicked out of the game last week. You had a guy kicked out of a game last week for throwing a punch or more of a brawl. But, I just look at this thing across, and it doesn't look anything like Adam Gase's offense from a year ago. And as you know, he calls the plays as well. So there's been that playoff party that we had last year, and Adam for president and everything else is over. And a lot of people are really upset about the way this thing has gone. And we have been blown out of two or three games. We've been shut out in two games. Should have been three games. We scored on a last play at New York against the Jets, or we'd be talking about being shut out three times. It's been really ugly football. We've lost two games we should have won at home against Tampa Bay. You turn it over five times and have 17 penalties. I mean, fellas, that is, you're going to lose. If you were playing a college, you'd have trouble winning when you do numbers, put up bad numbers like that.
Joe, I mean, that's actually flat out amazing how many similarities there are between the two franchises and all the way down to the fights to everything else. I'm going to ask you about a guy here. He's not a player, but he's well-loved here in Denver and was a former teammate of mine. How's Chris Cooper doing down there, and what is his role exactly? Is he – yeah, I know they brought in that other O-line coach, but what is
Chris? You could say the other offensive line coach that was snorting coke that we had.
Well, no, that's actually not where I was going, and that was actually sensitive for me as well, because that guy, Chris Forrester, he was my coach for 4 years. And
he's a great coach
and
a good friend of mine, and everybody's had the cocaine jokes around him, but he's a hell of a coach, as you know.
Right.
And it was sad. I was as shocked as anybody. I spent a lot of time on the road with him. He's one of my favorite guys. And, you know, had no idea this is going on. You don't know what guys do in their spare time. And
right.
So, but very well respected to see it in that way.
Yeah. But how's Coop doing, though?
Coop's – our offensive line's having a lot of problems. So
yeah.
I know Adam thinks the world of him. He came into a tough situation as kind of the number two offensive line coach behind Forster, and now in a situation last week, we had a lot of New England ran a lot of delayed blitzes, and we didn't touch them. We didn't touch guys up the middle. We didn't touch guys on the outside. We had four sacks and like five plays in the second half, really struggling. So, you know, it's one thing to be a player and a guy everybody likes. It's another to coach guys up and
sure.
get the best out of them. This offensive line's struggling. So I would just say this, to be honest, and I know a lot of guys like Coop, but they're going to be looking at that position and trying to figure out why it's been so bad. But it has been – our offensive line has really struggled a lot.
Well, and you've got a guy we're very familiar with down there. I mean, what's the tale of Jay Cutler? Honestly, Joe, when you guys signed Jay Cutler and we saw Julius Thomas and we saw the receivers and you see Jay Ajayi, who's now obviously moved on to the Eagles, I honestly thought the Dolphins were going to be a sleeper to really challenge the Patriots inside the division. And if things came together with that defense, man, there could have been a long playoff run in the offing, because we know that Jay and I know – Jay's personality is what it is, and it often rubs a lot of people the wrong way. Did so here in Denver. Wasn't exactly my favorite thing to do, was go to his Monday press conferences, especially after a loss. But the guy can play a little bit of ball when he seems motivated. Clearly, he doesn't seem motivated. I mean, what's gone wrong this year?
Well, you hit it so funny, because you guys are so familiar with this whole thing because the players you just mentioned, and, of course, you had Adam Gase as your coordinator. But real quickly, without getting long-winded here, Adam Gase, when Ryan Tannehill went down, first thing he thought of, I'm going to get Jay Cutler. I know he doesn't really want to do TV. I can get him back. I like the guy. I know him. He's not what everybody thinks he is, and he can still flat-out play. I had him in Chicago. I really liked him. So he got Jay Cutler to come in for the $10 million. And Julius Thomas, oh, I love him. That's a guy. That's a piece we're missing. I'm going to get the Denver Julius Thomas. Not the Jacksonville Julius Thomas. We've gotten the Jacksonville Thomas, who just hasn't been as good. He doesn't look quick. He struggles. Doesn't move. I've seen the highlights, and actually we've seen it with Adam Gase on Julius Thomas that the Broncos had with the 24 touchdowns in 2 years. And he doesn't look anything like that guy. Nothing at all in the red zone. The guy that you guys were a scoring machine with, and he was a big part of it. So we were really excited, like you guys are talking about, that, hey, we might be able to save this thing. Jay Cutler knows the system. He's ahead of the game. And it just has not worked out. Julius hasn't been as good. The offensive line has struggled. Jay has made some bad throws. He's got cracked ribs. He's got a concussion. So he's been pretty beaten up from the offensive line problems. And those guys, I know they both think the world of Adam Gase. They'd do anything for him. But as you said, this thing has just been a real disaster down here.
We're talking with Joe Rose on the Miami Dolphins broadcast crew of WQAM down there in Miami. We appreciate the time. We'll leave you on this. As a former tight end, and we did just got done talking about Julius Thomas, and as you said, during his time in Denver, now injuries have always been the guy's problem, but you go back to 2013, which you're speaking about right. Specifically when they were a scoring machine, and you had Welker in the slot, DT on the outside, Decker was a nice, he was a fourth option, but a nice fourth option. I mean, that was part of what helped Julius out, but he looked like the prototypical tight end for the modern era. There's so many of these good tight ends. What is your thought on how your position has evolved into what it is now, where if you don't have one, that is why a lot of these teams have red zone problems?
I totally agree. And you look at how good Kansas City is. We just got to see up close New England Patriots and Gronkowski. And if you get one of those guys – and they're special, and they're a big target. They don't have to block a lot. They can just be a big target and a mismatch for linebackers, especially on first and second down. Boy, having that, or even a Jimmy Graham and what he's doing in Seattle, they're special guys, but they got to be athletic, got to be able to move. And, you know, Julius Thomas just had, not to pick on him, but since you guys know him, he looks nothing, and I mean nothing like the guy that played for the Denver Broncos at all.
For Andrew Mason, I'm Andy Lindahl. This has been Horsing Around here on DenverBroncos.com. Talk to you next week.